You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey Geekscapists, Jonathan here, and welcome to a brand new Geekscape. This is episode 629. Now, maybe you just started subscribing to Geekscape, which means I love you. Thank you for subscribing to Geekscape. You may find that your feed has about 1,000 episodes in it. Well, that includes specials and panels from various cons, etc. So, yeah, you're going to have a pretty fat feed. That being said, listen to the episodes you want to listen to. Maybe it's a movie special with Ian Kerner. Maybe we go and do a deep dive on a Marvel Disney Plus show. Maybe it's a panel discussion that we had at LA Comic Con or at one of the other cons. Maybe it's an episode like the one you're going to get right now where we talk movies, video games, comics. Maybe it's an interview episode. But no, we're going to have Katie and our good friend Garrett Briones on this episode to talk about that brand new Thor Love and Thunder teaser trailer that came out, and I don't really know why it is so controversial. Just kidding. I do. It's the internet. People are going to bitch about stuff. So we'll talk a little bit about that bitching. We're also going to talk about the brand new video game that seems headed to the screen from Sega. You know, I love that Sonic too. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about the upcoming Nicolas Cage movie that hits theaters this weekend that I saw a little bit ago. What else can we talk about? Well, let me see. We got movies, video games, comics. I think we're going to cover all that stuff. TV. All right. Okay. The deck is loaded. I think we're ready to do a little bit of Geekscape. Are you there? Have you told your friends to check us out on YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, or shared this podcast feed with a friend? Maybe you text it to them and said, hey, you got to listen to this Geekscape episode. It's a lot of fun. It's informative. It's opinionated. And I think you'll like it. Take your time right now to do that. And I'll really appreciate it. Let's start it up. All right, Geekscapists, let's get Geekscape started. If I feel a little off, if it maybe you sound fatigued or scattered in any way, well, I got to tell you, the wedding planning is in full gear. I've kind of let Heidi handle a lot of it up to this point, but now it's just too much. Like, Jonathan, you can't just sit back and like point at stuff. That's not wedding planning. That's not really part of what it is to be in a relationship. But yeah, Heidi and I set a date a little while ago, and that date is coming faster than I realized. When this past weekend we started talking about venues for a rehearsal dinner, and that's when it started hitting me, and I was like, wait, how many people we got coming to the wedding? Wait, we got to feed these people. Wait. We got to have them like sit in chairs and stuff and maybe have them like enjoy music. Oh boy. This is real. countdown to the wedding is happening. But I do appreciate your feedback. I'd love to hear what y'all think about Jonathan getting married 2.0, Heidi getting married 1.0. Not bad. But yeah, it's going to be a party, Matt Kelly says off of the YouTube feed over there at youtube.com/GeekscapeTV. It is going to be a party, and spoilers, Matt Kelly's going to be at that party. Our wedding date is actually the same as his birthday. So it'll be a dual celebration. I will for sure be celebrating Matt's birthday at my wedding. Why not? He's one of my closest friends. He runs the Geekscape Podcast Network. Love him very, very much. Chris Fafalios of the band Punchline and the excellent Geekscape podcast One Hit Thunder is here. And he says, you know what? Have the rehearsal dinner at Cheesecake Factory. Well, you know what, Chris? Looking at the bottom line, it's starting to not sound like a bad idea. I do enjoy, I enjoy cheesecake at least. Maybe. We'll see what happens. We'll see. If Matt's down with Cheesecake Factory, maybe we'll just do Cheesecake Factory. But last time we had Matt pick a restaurant, he dragged us to the Spaghetti Factory during Comic-Con. And that was, there he is in the chat. And you got to be watching this stuff, Geekscapists. If you're just listening on the podcast, I really do appreciate it. You're the majority of Geekscape listeners there on the podcast feed. But you're really, really missing out on some of the chat we have here during the show. Basically, Matt and Chris going back and forth like they do on One Hit Thunder. Matt says, I suggest a different factory, one with spaghetti. Yes, that's the Spaghetti Factory. No, he loves it. We'll see. We'll see. Maybe we'll pick something a little bit fancier. So Matt, bring your good clothes to the wedding, because I think we're going to go a little bit fancier than Spaghetti Factory. I hope you all had a pretty good holiday weekend. But yeah, ours was busy. Some wedding. Speaking of Chris Fafalios, I know he hosts the One Hit Thunder podcast you can find right here on the network. Got to tell you though, it's not the only podcast that kid's been responsible for. You know Punchline. They did our theme song. They're one of my favorite bands, favorite people in the entire world. There is a podcast that you can find on your podcatcher called The Story of Punchline. There's one episode out and a reaction show, and I finally listened to the first episode, which tells the story of the band from its inception. It was three high school kids getting together and playing rock music kind of poorly in a garage. And it's really charming. They're one of my favorite bands, but hearing how they got together in 1997, meeting each other in high school because they all wore punk shirts, that was awesome. I loved listening to it. And Chris Fafalios says, I hate to say it, Punchline didn't do your theme song because I didn't play on it. That was Bellin and Steve. You know what, Chris? I'm going to go ahead and keep that narrative that Punchline did my theme song because... it's fine. If you want, like, throw up some bass lines and I'll integrate them into the theme song. And we'll see. Okay. Jim Pogranelli, y'all are just giving me tons of suggestions. He says, rehearsal dinner. Axe throwing? Yeah, I can see that. What's a rehearsal dinner? And what's a wedding if there isn't a sense of danger or potential maiming? I'm down. Let's figure it out. Something's going to get lit on fire. Why not do it at the rehearsal dinner? Why don't we rehearse the stunts for the wedding at the rehearsal dinner? Maybe we can have Matt Kelly on a motorbike jump through a fiery hoop or something like that. Chris Fafalios, I gotta get the show going. I gotta get Katie on here. I gotta get Chris on here. But you got a great idea. He says, we gotta make you a new theme song. You know, I brought that up late last year and people were not having it. Steve, your bandmate, the person who wrote this first song, said, we got to get Geekscape an updated theme song. Let's go ahead and open it up. If y'all want a new Geekscape theme song, email me at jonathan@geekscape.net. I personally think that if anything, we keep the theme song. We simply update the theme song with the inclusion of Chris Fafalios' bass licks. Sick bass licks. All right. It's podcast time. Let's get to the subjects. You all want to hear movies, video games, comic books, pop culture talk. And of course, you want to hear it not from me. I'm just here for stupid jokes. You want to hear from Katie, she's right. She's right a lot. And she told me to watch this show, Severance, and it is fantastic.
Yay!
So here's Katie. And I love her, but here's Garrett.
Hey.
Hey, Garrett.
He was not prepared for that at all.
That's all right. Garrett and Katie, we're going to be talking all the subjects that you heard me talk about, but I think we start off right off the bat with Katie's been talking about this
non-stop,
basically to herself
the last
couple episodes about how great Severance is on Apple TV, Apple Plus, whatever they call it.
Apple
and
TV Plus.
I got to tell you, I finally got the bandwidth to watch it because I finished up I got all caught up in Handmaid's Tale, and it took me forever to do that.
Oh, gosh. I got through, like, the first couple episodes, and I just felt sad for society being the same thing. So I couldn't get through that one.
It was really hard to watch during the Trump presidency.
Yes.
Because it was, like, a documentary.
Yes.
So I was very slow during the pandemic and watching that with Heidi, and then we got out of the pandemic. We were watching tons of shows. She gets frustrated with me because I'm usually pretty busy and try not to interrupt that with TV viewing. Like, I can't just binge stuff too much. But I like that on the Apple Plus and on the Disney Plus and the Plus and TVs and all that stuff, that, like, I like when they bring stuff out weekly, so it helps me gauge a little bit more, and I can not just catch sit there up and binge. And Severance is fantastic. Just like you said, it's fantastic.
I'm jealous of you, though, because you can binge it if you should want, which is hard not to. You don't?
No, it is not. You're unemployed. Listen, Katie lost her job. She can binge.
Wow. All right.
Now with the binging. I don't like the binging.
I'm not binging, man. I can't binge. If I binge, I start getting crazy. Like, I'm like, there's got to be something else I can be doing. And I'm sorry to put you on blast, Katie. But when Katie and I were starting the show today, I go, Katie, are you there? Like, hey. She was watching this show where people are making chocolate.
It's called The School of Chocolate, and it's about making chocolate art. It's insane. It's really cool. It's the guy from Instagram that everybody sees making these giant angels and things with, like, individual feathers on the wings. It's a cool show. I'm on the second episode. I'm not binging that. It's just a nice show to have on the background to make my brain go to sleep.
Why don't you watch that show where the Japanese kids have to do chores?
I did see that. Enough? That was marketed to me, and I don't want to. That makes me a little bit sad.
Why don't you watch that? That seems jam. Cute.
No, that seems up to your alley. Not mine.
Katie, you got to understand, I'm just way too busy to be binging stuff. I spend a lot of time.
You have time to watch children have anxiety attacks at a young age?
I haven't watched it yet. Heidi started watching it, and she said it was just, like, too weird, so she turned it off. But most of my time is spent sending Katie reels of monkeys dressed like gardeners and, like, like, putting plastic fruit in baskets. And
that sounds right.
I do like to send some silly ones to Matt Kelly as well. Garrett sometimes gets funny videos from me of people
buffoonery, as I would call it.
What were some good ones?
There was a guy who was running on a treadmill, but he was on top of a squat rack. So he was holding an elliptical, and he was holding it up while doing that. And then there's another one where he was doing bench flies with an actual literal bench. And it was the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen.
And I got to tell you, the way that guy's hanging with this bar under his arms, he's going to asphyxiate that major vein that runs up your arm. Like, he's going to do serious damage to his arms.
It didn't look fun, and it didn't look productive by any means.
Oh, he's doing it wrong. And, like, we're saying that on Geekscape. We're telling you that, like, that guy is working out wrong. Like, that's insane.
Well, hey, I mean, if you haven't heard about it on the Geekscape Games podcast, a lot of us are doing the Hero Trainer app at the moment, and we're getting all of our steps in and trying to get a guild going, guys.
You know what? I downloaded the app.
Did you?
I tried it for a day. I deleted the app.
To advance for it?
I think it's
20 miles a day. This is too little.
I downloaded the thing, and it was like, cap at 3,000 steps, and I was like,
you have to build your character. I'm capped at 5
build
right
the character up. I dropped 14 miles on that motherfucker the first day. It had a nosebleed, and the thing shorted out. And my hero ended up, I went to check on it, and there was a grave marker, and it said your hero is dead. You killed your hero. You efficiently just killed him. It was like in Ghosts and Goblins when, like, your hero dies and he just turns into, like, bones and jumps into, like, a pack of bones. It was really sad. So
how about this? Maybe you overshot the assignment because you have to build up the character
it's about an
first.
Arc.
Yeah, it's an arc of a character.
I'm sure the narrative is pretty great in that game.
A hero's journey.
It's a hero's journey training. Walking.
No, we're good. We're good. We're good. That being said, if we're talking about the Severance show, it's fantastic science fiction.
No,
it's incredible science fiction.
But here's the thing that I love about it is that it's very grounded science fiction. Like, it's a very, not possible thing, but it's not out of the realm of, like, huh, what if? Like, you put yourself in their shoes quite a bit of the time. Garrett, have you been able to watch this at all?
I have not. I saw like 50 ads for it while I was watching Superman and Lois last couple weeks. But I very much want to see it. I like the creative team behind it. I've heard that it's some of it's Ben Stiller that directed it or that did it, correct? Yeah,
I heard that first two episodes that I've seen.
Produced, yeah.
I heard a lot of people saying it was some of his best work, so I'm really wanting to check it out.
Yeah. No.
It is such an awesome mystery.
Did you watch the whole thing? I know you're saying that you are doing like one at a time, or how many episodes in are you in? You're three? Okay.
I've seen three episodes.
Okay.
Discipline is part of what.
Oh, listen, really, Geekscape guy? I think not. Come on. You're like, really calling the kettle black. Okay. All right.
You have to have. Listen. I know that time is amorphous at this juncture in your life, Katie. But listen,
you have to
pull yourself up for the bootstraps. You have to turn off the chocolatier or whatever the heck you're watching.
I'm two minutes into the School of Chocolate.
Listen, Katie, please. We're not going to get through this unless you just show a little bit of, you know, gumption. Just really one episode at a time. And then old man Jonathan goes to sleep. That's really the truth. The truth is binge it. No, no way. My ADD kicks in and I start climbing the walls. Just not going to happen. That being said, Jim Paganelli wants to know, Garrett, this question is for you. He says, hey, how's that Superman and Lois? Oh. I kind of gave up on the Berlanti verse a while back.
Superman's my guy. So I think the show is great. It is. If you gave up on that, you know, I don't fault you if you kind of stepped away from those shows. They are they have that network 22 episodes a season kind of thing. So it really stretches out story. But this show has been, it's a lot tighter. It's like 15 episodes, has the cinematography and everything. It doesn't look like anything else on the CW. It looks like it has a little bit more of a budget. A lot of times it looks on the level of many features, and it is a great like Superman being Superman story, as well as a great Lois Lane story, them being parents, which I think is the most, you know, that's been around in the Superman mythos now for almost a decade of him being a father. And I think it's the best thing that's happened to the character in years. And I'm happy the show is already exploring that. And it has that Reeves feel. There's a little bit of homage to Man of Steel, Superman, the animated series. It feels like a melting pot of so many different eras, you know, a lot of John Byrne Superman feeling in there, some Dan Jurgens Superman. And it is just such a breath of fresh air. And if we're not going to get Superman on the big screen, it's so rewarding to get to have him and Lois week to week in this elongated arc. And I adore that show so much.
Dude, you've sold me on it.
Yeah.
I've been so scared to get it. You know, getting like tipping, like, putting your toe in the DC pool, like you don't really know what you're going to get.
That's always been my like kind of resistance in terms of DC properties, especially the television shows, because sometimes they can start pretty great and go pretty south. But this is changing my opinion of how I approach this.
And they designed it in a way where it is connected to that greater universe. But you could literally, the first 4 minutes of the pilot episode are, you learn this entire Superman and Lois's history and you're in it, and this show feels the most disconnected from any of those other ones. You can jump right on board with it. So it's really a treat.
Cool.
In the need to get Katie up and at him, is there a role for her? Could she play Mr. Mitzelplex and maybe a gender swap?
Yes. Definitely. Okay. Definitely. I would say that is a perfect choice right there.
Okay.
Just don't say the name.
That's the only way to get rid of him.
Yeah. So she can never say it backwards.
Yeah. So Katie. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Katie, you know who Mr. Mixleplix is?
I honestly do not.
Okay. He's a little like leprechaun like imp wearing gold and purple who is from a different dimension, comes in, and he just likes to prank Superman and cause mischief.
Okay.
And the only way to get him to go back to his dimension is to trick Mr. Mitzelplex or Mrs. Mitzelplex, Hampton in your case, into saying their name backwards. It's the only way. And let's start the letter writing campaign to get Katie.
I'm in. Hashtags. For the leprechaun pimp, it sounds like. Like got a lot of really bright like that's what I'm imagining in my head right now.
That works. Just, yeah.
Like that's feather boa of some kind.
Change the name to Mr. Pimple Pimp, I guess.
Pimple Pimp. Dr. Pimple Pimp.
But Katie, thank you for getting us on to Severance.
I'm glad you liked it.
It's great sci-fi. Geekscape, if you don't know what it's about, a company where you literally split your personalities between homework, life at home, and life at work, and you, in neither personality, knows what is happening in the other one, and lines start to blur. It starts off very quickly, but you catch up and you know exactly what's happening. It's very clean. They do a great job of explaining everything, and again, it's fantastic sci-fi. But to tell you more would ruin the mystery. But John Turturro is an MVP. Patricia Arquette's fantastic, and of course, Christopher Walken's in it. It's fantastic.
I didn't know that Christopher Walken was going to walk in, and you know, I meant that. I did mean that. I did.
When he showed up, I said, "I forgot he was in this." I'm so happy.
No, it was one of those things that I was like, "What? Christopher Walken's in this?" And he fits seamlessly in. Like, it doesn't. Like, every time I see him, I can't remember his like actual name as the actor. I'm just like, Bert, yay!
I get really excited. It's a great show. I would say don't binge it. Watch it one at a time. Think about it. Hang out.
Then read the book. Please. Even if you don't have Apple TV Plus, there is a book, Garrett, if you have an iPhone, on the Apple Books app. Just look for Severance. Okay. And it's a great companion piece. And it has nothing to do with the main story, but it kind of still introduces you into the world. And like what's that. Interesting? If you have watched the show, there's a really cool thing that connects at the very end that connects to the show.
I definitely do that.
Garrett just got a new job. He doesn't have time for this. Yeah. Watch the show or read the book.
I love that suddenly I'm the like lackadaisical lazy person.
Garrett's not kicking his feet up watching people pour chocolate all over themselves and like guessing whether or not it's cake, okay? Garrett doesn't have time for this. Garrett doesn't have time. That's fluff. All right. Garrett is working. Yeah, I got bills. He's joined the workforce. Don't you worry, Katie.
We're gonna get you now back that I got laid off. Feet. Yeah.
Katie, when you get back on your feet and you play Mrs. Pimple, you're gonna be fantastic.
Can we just like set a precedent here? Just because I got a laid off doesn't mean I'm off my feet. Oh, rethink the whole picture.
No. I think in this case, you're off your feet. You were watching this chocolate show, and I said, Katie, are you going to join us on the show? And you were, I saw you in the video feed. Your feet were up, and it seemed like you were pouring chocolate into your mouth.
How dare I get comfortable when there is work to be done somewhere? Somewhere. Same.
Go take somebody else's job.
I already have a job. I write for fandom. So
the memes company?
Yeah. It's not a meme company.
That's not a job. Okay. Let's see. Matt Kelly says, Katie has the most insane work schedule I've been in a while. I've seen in a while. Let this woman have a week to veg. Matt Kelly was so insistent on writing that, he didn't even pause to put periods in it.
he messaged me this week. He was very upset.
He's like, he wrote that so fast. It's okay. And then Emily, I think I know who that is, says burn. I don't even know. Out of the stupid things that I've been saying, I don't even know what that's about. But Emily, thank you for watching. You're amazing. Can we get into let's just harp on Katie a little bit longer and then she's done. Katie, I don't understand something. I don't understand many things, but here's the title of this segment, Moon Knight. Why is Katie confused?
Okay. This is a trip of a show, and like not having any knowledge of the comics or anything about the character, this show does not hold my hand any way, shape, or form. I don't know who the main character of him is. I think I know from you guys and your explanation, things are going bonkers. And there are so many fetch missions that I'm like, what is this for? And I am also not very well versed in Egyptian gods. And there's a lot of Egyptian god references and a lot of new characters coming in that I just feel like I'm here for the ride, but I'm getting slammed by just content and backstory and things that I just have no knowledge of. That's why,
Jared, I'm confused. what do you want to say to Katie? How do we even begin to clear this up? We just had Christian Blatt on the show last week. He couldn't do it. You want to take a stab at helping her out?
I don't even know.
We're trying to limit the condescension on this one.
I guess I just need to know. So as far as the character, okay. So it's okay. So the first two episodes we spend mostly with Stephen Grant as our vessel to get into the story. But yes, he is.
But he's
Spectre.
Not our main.
He yeah. is, but he isn't. They're yes, both no, the main that. Character, but they're both also the other person's supporting.
But that's the thing is that because I haven't trusted who the main character is and what the, yes. who this story is really about, because the first episode was solely on, I don't even remember his
Stephen Grant.
I didn't even know. I only knew that Mark Spector was the guy. Like he's yes. our main point of reference because of our talks on this podcast. the show, in my opinion, did not give us that lead in.
Because I talked to London about this. Or because I think, because Mark Spector is his God-given name. That's what he was born right. as. You know, I told London, I think the reason why you start with Stephen Grant is because you don't want it to seem that like Mark Spector is the only valid identity of the character. That Stephen Grant, you start with him, so it's not just you start with Mark Spector and then he gains Stephen Grant. It's you start with Stephen Grant, who is ostensibly just a you know, one of his identities that he gains. I'm trying to make sure I'm making this clear. That so that when we are told, no, Mark Spector is the real person, you have that sort of, you know, tear in yourself where you're like, well, no, but Stephen Grant, for all intents and purposes, he is a valid person. He has lived some form of a life. So that's why it's confusing. It's also probably going to get confusing because I think there's another identity that's coming.
I think there's a third coming.
No, there's definitely a third. I mean, this last episode
basically
because like they were both like, oh, we didn't do it. And it's like, okay, great. There's going to be more.
I think we're getting
I don't
Jake.
Know the limit to all of these different personalities. And I'm very excited for everyone to like get the Easter eggs of all these different people. My problem is that like I don't know. Because it's told in such a way of lack of clarity of what's going on, just kind of what's happening, it's hard to tell from episode to episode which character I'm supposed to be following.
Mm-hmm. Well, he uses an accent. Stephen Grant has an accent.
Wow, this is just, wow, condescension alley.
there's an accent, and then when Stephen Grant, the one thing that they did, I think this is the best version of Moon Knight that they've told, because I think I've said it before the show that I've never really found a Moon Knight storyline that I thought was like the definitive Moon Knight, and I had worries about the show. That being said, I think that this is the best version of this character, the best telling of this character, and they've been painstaking in making it clear.
I'm glad. I'm probably just an idiot. That's fine. But I feel like
I've read some of the fandom memes. They're fantastic. They're really well written. All three sentences in the fandom stuff is really well researched, and I can tell it's expert analysis.
Also, go fuck yourself.
No, okay, so Katie, we start. I'll tell you why I think we started with Stephen Grant. Stephen Grant is the British alter ego, and also he's the Mr. Knight character with the suit and tie.
Right.
That's been really washy in the books. Mr. Knight's not necessarily Stephen Grant in the books. No. I love that they. Forget the books. Forget the books. I love that they firmed it up in the series that the traditional Moon Knight costume is Mark. The Mr. Knight is Steven. I love that they kept that strict. Okay. And the reason you don't start with Mark Spector is he's pretty kind of a ruthless mercenary.
Sure.
And he's a bit of a killer.
That's fine.
And he's not a very likable character.
I get the intention of like how they produced the show, like how they rolled that out a little bit more slowly. Because we also have the story on top of it of the Egyptian god that's also kind of possessing him.
Khonshu's possessing them both.
Right. No, he's possessing all of them.
He's possessing Mark.
Yeah.
Khonshu possesses them both, but Khonshu has been cast out by the Egyptian gods because he muddles a lot with shit. And you see that happen in this episode where they lock him up because he starts fucking with time and he starts messing with the sky. And Khonshu's being locked away. That being said, Khonshu being locked away is the bad guy's plan. The plan is for Khonshu to be locked away so that Mark doesn't have his powers.
Yeah.
So Mark doesn't have access to the suit. So that when the bad guys start erupting, it's crazy.
The suit is because of Khonshu.
That's Khonshu's power.
Okay, so he has no access to the suit without Khonshu.
No, things are going to be screwed. As long as Khonshu is locked away, Mark's going to have a lot of problems accessing that suit. And Steven will too, because they're going to be going back and forth in that. They can't access the suit. They're very vulnerable because the suit is almost OP. It is so powerful. It's bulletproof. It makes you an awesome fighter. It's huge. There's no suit without Khonshu. And right now, the gods have locked Khonshu away because it started meddling with the sky. Mm. when you see the pantheon of Egyptian gods, you really only need like one or two of them. One of them is the one that Ethan Hawke's character is the current avatar for. That's the bad guy god. That's the evil one. Yeah, the other ones are kind of like a trial. Yeah, a tribunal. Gods.
Like, I thought he was worshiping Khonshu, like with like the scales and everything. I also
that's a different god.
Yeah, yeah. That didn't make sense to me. Yeah, I didn't. Yeah. Because right, also.
Amit is a different looking god. It's like not. Amit is a crocodile hippo thing.
Right. Which I ended up getting, but.
Way different than Khonshu. And. Yeah. And Ethan Hawke's character said several times, like, when Khonshu delivers its judgment, it's too late. It's after the problem's happened. Amit delivers judgment before the problem, almost like Minority Report, before the problem has occurred. And we don't sit well with that because it means, like, killing kids and babies who may not be guilty. I think that's
stuff is an old woman who we don't know if she already did her sinning or her sinning's yet to come. I find that interesting. It's just the hard thing about it is that I'm trying to get a grasp on all these different characters, all these different personalities, all these different perspectives, and I'm losing my grip the more we add to this.
Just like
personalities with Khonshu on top of them. Two personalities with Khonshu on top of them fucking around, but Khonshu's got locked out.
Yeah.
And Khonshu's now they just have, they have the human Mark with his personality, multiple personalities, and his wife. They have to figure out how to keep Amit from being resurrected. Yeah. I think that's the storyline, and it's going to get worse. What I saw when I saw that pantheon of Egyptian gods is like, I can't wait for them to one day meet the Asgardians.
Did anyone else like start singing the Prince of Egypt song, trying to remember all the random gods? Was that just me? Because I was like, Hotep. And then I was like,
I'm just ignoring the gods. I'm ignoring all the gods.
I have to at this point. There's too many characters. And they're mostly in Mark.
There's only Khonshu and Mark.
Don't
get confused. You know that they're possessed by the gods that their avatars for when their eyes turn on bling bling.
Right. No, that's clear. It's the Stevens. It's the whoever the third personality is going to be. Maybe it's the one that you're expecting. Maybe it's not. I'm already getting a little overwhelmed by character overlood.
There's only two. That's my opinion. There's Mark and Steven sharing a body.
And then the wife, she came out.
She doesn't share a body.
Good Lord.
She just
shows up to like solve the mystery and then get burned and left behind is what her point is.
Yeah. Oh my God. When they showed up to this last episode, and there were a bunch of dudes with spears running and arrows running around on horses. I was like, okay.
No, my favorite was that he came off the horse shirtless and he was just like, oh, hello. I was like, yes, as we do when we're rich.
Yeah. I love that they basically went to this like Egyptian strip club to find this ancient like piece of clue or whatever the heck it was in this thing. I was like, all right, cool. I'll go wherever you want me to go on this one, Marvel. You've done a good job so far because you were kind of redeeming Moon Knight for me.
Good.
What the heck are you talking about, sir?
Garrett,
I told you before. Garrett, I told you before, there's no definitive Moon Knight storyline that I thought
was Greg Smallwood, Jordy Belair's run. 14 issues. I think it's the best. There is another run, I would say, but I don't really want to say the writer's name. But there is another run that is it's probably the reason we have this show, but I don't want to bring up the writer, but that it would be the 2014 issues 1-6 run.
Right, but the art was good.
Yes, just the writer's a piece of trash, but it was really good.
I think, yeah. Can we talk real quick while we're talking about pieces of trash about how the X-Men are pieces of trash and how Katie should not watch the X-Men? Do not read X-Men, Katie.
Oh, boy.
Matt Kelly just added another show to the podcast. Okay, so Geekscape, let me just give you a quick, we've barely mentioned on the show before, but back in 2019.
Two very different eras.
Especially with the X-Men, very different eras. In 2019, Jonathan Hickman came out and he cleaned up the X-Men. They were in the middle of a reboot. He took two issues and the issues stated this. The issues were that Moira MacTaggert, who up to this point is not a mutant, is now, she's suddenly a mutant. She can actually come back to life after she dies. But she remembers everything that happened in her life and she restarts as a baby. So she kind of has a time travel aspect. So like if I died right now at my early 40s, I would go back to 1978 when I was born, and I would remember everything that I had up until this point, and I would start my life again with all that knowledge. She gets that, and so she knows how the mutant nation built by Xavier and the school and Magneto and Apocalypse and all those wars of the X-Men, she knows how it ends every time. So every time, and she's gone through like 10 lives of this, trying to improve the mutant-dom or make sure that Xavier's dream exists or like survives. So that took a year to tell. It was really great storytelling, and it left us at a place where by the end of it, Moira has succeeded, and Xavier and Magneto together have built the mutant safe haven nation of Krakoa, and all the mutants, including bad guys like Mr. Sinister and Apocalypse, they are welcome there. And there's a, and all the X-Men and all the bad mutants are now have a new chance, because the bad mutants were only bad because humans hated them. So Magneto is now a leader of the X-Men, and he's one of the leaders of Krakoa. You've got Apocalypse is the same.
Quiet
and now
council.
you have this quiet council, and it's 12 mutants, right, good and bad, who are in charge of making sure that this nation survives against the human threat on Earth. And it's not bad, pretty good. They can do all sorts of wonderful things. Some humans are threatened by them. Some humans aren't. And it looks like Xavier's dream is going to survive. That being said, in order to protect the dream, the wheels are starting to fall off. Beast is in charge of X-Force, which is like a covert ops unit of like Domino and Wolverine. Their job's to do a little bit of the wet works to make sure that some of the stuff that has to happen to protect the nation of minorities like the X-Men, make sure that stuff kind of stays out of the spotlight, and they clean their hands of it. So Xavier's not blamed with it. So Xavier knows that bad shit is being done by Beast and his team. And Beast is definitely doing bad shit, like experimenting on things like people and like humans and like infecting people with stuff that turns them into mutants and crazy shit that Beast is doing. He's absolutely a war criminal. And Xavier's totally like, hey, I'll sign the checks on that stuff. And the thing is, they've also unlocked the ability to bring mutants back from the dead. So like if any mutant dies, they can actually be turned back. Their consciousness has been put in Cerebro. Xavier knows where they are. And let's say Wolverine dies on a mission. He's recently been uploaded before the mission. If Wolverine dies on the mission, they just reboot another Wolverine like and put the consciousness back in.
Is it the same where it goes?
They can all get respawns.
Is it respawn as fully grown, or is it they have to go through all of like fully just grown. Like okay?
They have like five,
which is crazy to me.
To do it
in the case of Wolverine, are they releasing him with adamantium every single time?
That's a great question.
It's like he wasn't born with the adamantium, so when he respawns, why does he have the adamantium
bone
on?
Claws and all that.
He just had the bone claws. They're like, hey, welcome back, Logan. Do you mind getting in the adamantium pool and getting adamantium painfully put back onto your exoskeleton? Okay, we're good. There's too many X-books. That's the argument I'm about to give you. There's way too many X-books. There's too much stuff going on, and beyond the majority of the X-Books being just okay and maybe one or two every month being pretty good, the X-Men are no longer dealing, they're no longer acting like heroes. They're acting like complete war criminals and just looking out for themselves and doing whatever the hell they want on Earth. And I think I'm ready for another AVX, another Avengers versus X-Men or something.
Well, that's what the big event is. It's Avengers versus X-Men versus Eternals in Judgment Day. That's what's coming in a couple months.
Remove the Eternals because nobody wants to see that. But Avengers versus X-Men sounds pretty good.
Whoa. Okay.
You're talking comics or you're talking movies?
You're saying you want the X-Men to get spanked and get put in their place. That's literally what the book is. They're positing the question that X-Men could be deviants, and so the Eternals are gonna spank that booty, that X booty, that war criminal booty.
Listen,
and take it down.
How far away from the microphone you did that,
Garrett? There's currently a Karen Gillan, Issa Rivik, comic book of the Eternals going on right now, and this can lead us into the Thor conversation about this new Thor trailer teaser. Are you enjoying that book? Are you enjoying your Eternals?
To be fair, when the book started, I was nowhere near a comic book store. I am behind on it. I would like to read it. I've heard good things. But I wanted to say for the X-Men book, I'm enjoying what I'm reading. I mostly have to stuck to the main X-Men title and Excalibur. Mm-hmm. Those have been the two I've stuck with. I wonder, and I thought this ever since Hickman announced that he was leaving, when he was going to see the whole thing through. He always usually, you know, he saw his Avengers run through, he saw his Fantastic Four run through. He didn't see his Ultimate runs through, and that will always hurt me in my heart, but that's a different story for a different day. But I wonder, I think the idea is eventually the X-Men, who now view themselves as gods, essentially, are going to have that Olympus is going to fall. But I think Hickman left because so many other writers, I guess, had wanted to continue. They liked where they were in the story, and they wanted to kind of stretch the Krakoa era out a little bit longer. And I just don't want the overall story to suffer because of it, because I don't want it to be like we're going to keep them bad guy, or, you know, questionably gray characters for so long that when they eventually do turn back, it's going to be, you know,
unbelievable.
Yeah, I'm worried that we're stretching out this second act maybe a little too long before the fall, you know.
Beast is basically Dark Beast from
Apocalypse at this point.
Like, Beast is so irredeemable. He's so far from the jolly Beast that we grew up with. And now it's like, if he just yelled like stars and garters, I'd be like, shut up, Warren. And I was like, no. You deserve everything that's coming to you. You've experimented on everybody on that island. You've experimented on like rival nations. You're like, Beast deserves what's coming to him as the scientist in charge of a lot of this stuff being terrible. That being said, I agree with you. I think that some of the X-Men stuff is actually really good if you limit the books. My books of choice are X-Men because Jerry Duggan is a friend of the show. He's been on the panel with us. It's in the feed, Geekscapist. Go search for it. I think he's a good writer. Yeah. He's doing a great job following up what Hickman's doing. And I read the X-Force book because I got to keep my eye on Beast and like what trash moves he's doing as a horrible character. He's quickly become one of my least favorite X-Men.
I feel like if his entire storyline was a reel, you would share it with all of us, like over and like the, all the cringy moments of like, oh, wow,
look at this war crime he just committed.
He just injected a child with a sentient virus. Great.
Watch
way
him
to
do
go.
It in great detail. HD.
Yeah. It's not fun. But yeah, I think the X-Men are due for a reboot. The sad thing about that is, and yeah, they're going to get spanked by the Eternals and the Avengers. And the Marvel Universe at large. That being said, it was 2019. I feel like we just had a reboot. And the X-Men, this whole like Krakoa storyline of the X-Men, I think people will ultimately look back on it fondly because Hickman's stuff was so good. But another reboot. Can we survive it? Well, and they raced to like 9-10 books so quickly after those first two that it really watered down the line really quickly.
The only thing I fear about a reboot is that it's just gonna go back to, you know, not go back to, but I think it's gonna be, I don't want to say a cash grab. I'm trying to figure out how I want to word this. I just don't want it to go straight back to this. Oh, we're just going back to the school is back in session. We're all headmasters again. It's like,
square,
you can't.
Square wouldn't be
it's like
the way to go.
Well, Katie, I don't think it's possible that they do that. Because even if they get spanked, two major things have happened during this run. And I think those things are here to stay. They've terraformed Mars and turned it into the actual, like, new mutant planet.
Academy.
Like the X-Men. No, it's the whole, it's a planet of mutants. It is now, they consider it the capital of the Milky Way galaxy, but of our solar system. So if you come to Earth, no, screw Earth. You're going to want to deal with Mars. Mars is now the capital of the solar system. They've changed that. They've also found this kind of like mirror version of Krakoa called Arrakau.
Yes.
And it has older mutants on it. That's where Apocalypse came from. And that is a different nation that kind of lives in like an underneath. Like, what is it in Stranger Things?
Oh, the Upside Down.
The Upside Down. It's like the Upside Down for mutants.
Yeah.
And there's other mutants there. And I think that's two things that, I think the Mars thing and that Arrakau thing is two things that are going to stay.
Yeah.
No matter if the X-Men get spanked, but man, am I excited for the X-Men to get spanked from here. They're acting like a bunch of four-color a-holes right now in these comics. It's hard to deal with.
Yeah,
it's hard. Guys, Geekscape is like, this is what I deal with here. When I read a comic, I cry on the inside. Speaking of crying on the inside, have you read Twitter lately, guys? When you see this new Thor teaser and the reaction to it?
Oh, yeah. So fantastic. I mean, wait, the reaction to it? Are you talking about...
The trailer, the teaser trailer for Thor Love and Thunder is so much fun.
I'm so excited.
Jason Aaron Issa Ribic run where they have this. Let's just explain this. I know Garrett loves the storyline, but basically this might be spoilers for Thor coming up, but the storyline is in Thor Love and Thunder. It's this storyline where there is this ultimate god that's going around kicking all the other gods. How would you describe Gore?
Well, he is.
He's not a god.
He would be offended that you called him a god. He would kill you for calling him.
He's a worshiper. He's somebody who worshipped a god. The god failed him in his planet.
Yes,
and he went out and is like, all right, I'm going to go kill him.
Yeah.
He killed his god, and then he went off to kill the rest of the gods, and it brings him to Asgard, where he's going to try and kill the fucking Asgardians.
Yes.
And when we first meet Gore, who's playing him?
Christian Bale.
Gore is super OP because he's killed a ton of gods, and you just see all these planets that have gone godless and their religions have failed and their gods have died, and now Gore has his sights set on the Asgardians, and that's what we're going to get in the movie. That being said, there's been a status quo change. Thor, as you saw in the last Marvel movie with Thor in it, as you saw in the comics, Thor is no longer Thor. He's Odin's son.
Mm-hmm.
The hammer is no longer his. It's either been shattered or in the movie, but now in this one, Jane Foster wields the hammer, and guess what? She's also Thor.
Mm-hmm. Lady Thor.
And we're gonna get Natalie Portman as Thor.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a couple controversies, and you tell me, Garrett, which way you want to take this. There's a controversy based on the artwork, because I said Ribic's artwork's fantastic, but it's also being leaned on heavily in the teaser in the film. And there is the controversy of a bunch of neckbeards on Twitter saying that she's Lady Thor, she Thor, whatever she's Thor, but she's not Thor because Thor is Thor. How could she be Thor?
Oh boy.
Let's just agree that the teaser was awesome.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see this fucking movie. I'm getting massive heavy metal vibes from this.
It feels like everything.
It's gonna be fucking awesome.
Everything that that Chris Pratt's character always wanted to see himself as, and then Thor just comes in and is like, you know what? I'm retiring from like being a god. I might as well just do like some 80s rock and roll.
I cannot
wait for that dynamic.
This is gonna be a lot of fun. So we got this Thor Love and Thunder. What do you say about this? Let's start with the Jane Foster controversy, because this is one that I was like, you idiots are out of your minds.
Yeah.
The argument is they have to name her something else because Natalie Portman or Jane Foster as Thor isn't Thor, because Thor is Thor. How do you respond to that one, Garrett?
Well, it feels like it is 2014 all over again. I remember when the book was coming out, I was so excited, and then everyone was, you know, talking all their mess. You know, it's purely like they're not even hiding it, because it's like, okay, well, why is it okay that Donald Blake, the first person Thor was ever bound to, why is it okay that he was Thor? Why is it okay that Eric Masterson, who later became the character Thunderstrike, was Thor? Why is it okay when it's those beautiful blonde haired white men? Why is it okay? But then, oh no, a woman goes by the title of Thor. Even in the book, you know, Jason Aaron had to address that. He and Russell Dowderman, and I believe it was issue like 6 of that series. There's like 4 volumes of Jason Aaron's Thor. It gets very confusing, but it is worth the read.
It's really good.
Odinson straight up, you know, Thor straight up tells her, you are Thor. I'm just Odinson for now. I got some stuff to figure out. I'm having a midlife crisis, and I need to figure things out. And it's just, it's literally, yeah, I feel like I am, I remember this when I was 15 years old having to deal with this. It's so, I'm almost 24
years old.
And
where did you fall when
again.
You were?
It's like, it's so weird. I'm so over. It's the same thing where people don't want to call Sam Wilson Captain America. It's like, you are not even hiding what your issue is. It's like,
colors,
it's ridiculous.
But Bucky was Captain America and they had no problem with it.
Oh, people still to this day say Bucky should have been Captain America, but it's like, you're not hiding what your problem what is, buddy.
Yeah. You give the mantle to a black man and then suddenly it's a problem. You give Mjolnir to a woman, and now you have a problem. But I, Geekscape, if you're watching this on the stream, you can see the graphic I just threw up. You may not be able to read it because the font is small, but I'll explain it here for the Geekscape listeners. Right here, we have a panel where Thor is now Odin's son. He does the hammer doesn't respond to him. The hammer is now with I'm going to call her Natalie Portman, but Jane Foster's Thor. At this point in the storyline, because it went on for months and you don't know who the female Thor is, you didn't know who had the hammer, you didn't know who it was responding to, and then you find out that it is Jane Foster. In the comics, and I don't know if they're going to do this in the film, this would be heavy. In the comics, Jane Foster is dying of a cancer. She's going through like chemo.
I think they might be doing that storyline in this.
That would be intense because it gives Thor something to lose. He's really like in peril. It would really knock him on his ass to see Jane Foster having to struggle with this. But when she picks up the hammer, she becomes Thor, and it kind of negates her chemo. Like the cancer is still there, but it negates her chemo, and she has to start it over again. So she really has to balance being Thor in trying to heal herself as a human. It's really a great storyline. But the panel I just threw up was where Odin's son, you know him, Chris Hemsworth is going to play him, sees the female Thor, we will call her Thor, and right there on the panel, and this has happened several times in the book, where she's clearly worthy, she's just whipped a ton of ass, and he says, "That hammer has the power to destroy worlds or to save them. Carry it well, Thor." Odin's son says that. Chris Hemsworth says that. To the Natalie Portman Thor, she's freaking Thor. And as Jim Paganelli brought up, and as I'll just go ahead and say this, I'm still getting married, but I definitely quoted it to Heidi yesterday in my argument because I was so irate getting off Twitter. Whosoever holds this hammer, if they be worthy, shall possess the power of Thor. It says right there on the damn hammer that if you pick this thing up, you're Thor. Mm-hmm. When Steve Rogers picked up the hammer when he was fighting in that last Infinity Endgame movie. Like, he is Thor. For that moment, he had the power of Thor. Sure, he didn't get slapped with like the funny Norse helmets and all this stuff, but he had the power of Thor. Shall possess the power of Thor.
Yeah.
Boom, you're freaking Thor. So, Beta Ray Bill. Yeah. Beta Ray Bill was Thor. Yeah. I hate to tell you, Beta Ray Bill was Thor. Beta Ray Bill actually had a different hammer, though.
I wanted to say something also. It's like, I'm not saying that Marvel did this in an attempt to negate any of that, but also there's a difference. Like, Odin's son in the comic, like, Thor becomes Odin's son because he's, like I said, he's having a midlife crisis. He gets his arm cut off. He loses his shirt suddenly. He loses to Malekith, who Jane Foster Thor, pushes back and defeats to fight another day. Chris Hemsworth Thor, he is still he still has the peak of his powers. He still has a hammer that conducts electricity. Like, he is still Thor. It's like, it's not even the same. In that book, he had an axe. He had his axe Yarnbjorn. Mm-hmm. It's like, he's like, even if you want to go and cry that she is going by the title of Thor, he still has all of those abilities that he didn't have in the book at the time. I don't understand why it's an issue. He still has all the same Thor goodness you love. He's even going to wear a helmet that looks like the Simonson suit.
You see Yarnborn in the trailer a lot.
Quite a bit.
You see the axe a lot.
Well, wait, are you talking about...
No, it's not the axe. Yeah. It's a different one. Well, what was the name of the axe?
Stormbreaker. Visually is based on Ultimate Mjolnir from the Ultimate comics, but it is called Stormbreaker to give it a name. But yes.
So he's got Stormbreaker in the teaser. You see a lot of it. He's like piloting the boat with it and everything. And then you see Natalie Portman grab
the hammer,
Mjolnir, and she's ready to rock. Who knows? Maybe by the end of this, maybe we'll just have some Throg, and you'll see that a frog can have the power. I mean, if it's whoever's worthy, like obviously, like a dog could just go pick up Mjolnir and be worthy because it's a good boy. We could have a ton of Thor dogs, cats not so much.
Peter Loki should do it.
But no, Beta Ray Bill, I don't think Beta Ray Bill did have Mjolnir for a stretch.
He did, and then he got the comic Stormbreaker, which is also different than the on-screen Stormbreaker.
The Stormbreaker that we get in the movie MCU is different than the one.
It is exactly just Ultimate Thor's hammer, which is also an axe, which when I first learned about Ultimate Thor and I saw that Mjolnir, I thought, that was the most metal thing I'd ever seen. It's like, it's a hammer, but it's also an axe. That's the coolest thing I've ever seen in my life. Still it.
I digress. That's what we're getting in the movie. Okay, the other thing we're getting in the movie is a lot of incredible vistas and imagery. And I'm bringing this up on the screen, but this one definitely created a bit of a controversy because ultimately, Asad Rebic's artwork is incredible. Here's some artwork that I put up on here of just some of the versions of Thor you're going to see throughout this storyline. Again, if you're not reading, if you haven't read Jason Aaron Asad Rebic's Thor, it's beautiful on top of being really, really well written. But the one thing is, it is so well drawn and painted that at the end of the day, you end up seeing, let me pull it up, but but there is actually a problem in that a lot of the artwork is like panel replication of what was in the comic. I'm still looking for it, but
yeah.
No, there's been a controversy in that if, when you compare the two panels together, it's almost like they lifted it right off the comic. Yeah,
they used it like a storyboard.
Like a storyboard.
And isn't the first time that that's happened, is it?
No, I would say ideas. I think that Disney and Marvel have done that a lot. They've done it in the Captain America movies. They've done it in several of the films where they'll take an iconic image from the comic and they'll replicate it on screen. Usually it's an iconic moment, but in the case of this one piece of artwork, it is pretty much the exact same frame. And it's created a lot of controversy where people see it in the teaser and they're like, wait, are y'all not going to pay Asad Rebic and the colorist for putting this together? Like, this is literally what was in the comic and y'all are now putting it on screen and this movie is going to make $1 billion. How much did the artists see? And it's a bit of a controversy. DC's addressed it in a bit. They've actually paid their artists, you know, when the movie comes out, and they've thrown them some more money. What was the famous one that happened recently where the creator said, "Nah, keep your money. I'm good. What was the,
I just saw the that Marvel release now.
On that one? Huh. It's really recent.
It was the creator of America Chavez. I can't remember his name, but it was, he said that he saw what they offered him and he was like, he laughed at it.
Joe Casey, America Chavez. You're going to get to meet her in Doctor Strange 2. You've seen her in the trailer. He cuts a bus in half to narrowly avoid it hitting her. She's going to be a major character in Doctor Strange 2, created by Joe Casey. Joe Casey was offered some money, and he said, no, that's a joke. No, for the, he wrote it. He's a writer, creation of the character. So,
I've heard that might be a pretty standard thing. A lot of that happens. But that's impressive that he said no.
The Hawkeye storyline, the Matt Fraction AHA run, like so much of the recent Hawkeye Disney Plus show was based on that run. Like, how can you avoid paying those people for their ideas? Just creating the bros. Yeah. Pizza dog.
And that one's an even funnier case because Matt Fraction is listed as a producer on that show, but he only became a producer by happenstance because I think someone that was working on it was friends with him and they're like, hey, we're using stuff from your book. And he only is credited by happens. Like, they weren't going to go out of their ways to say from the start, hey, come on the show and work on it. It's they do not compensate. Like, when I saw this, I was really excited because, I mean, I love Asad's work on Thor, God of Thunder and King Thor. But it was disheartening to immediately know. What was that?
And Eternals.
Yes, he's currently working on Eternals. I don't know if he's doing the art for Judgment Day. Actually, I think that's someone else. But it was disheartening because
his artwork's amazing.
It is. He's one of my favorite artists. And it is disheartening to know that like his work is being used as a storyboard. Yes, it's awesome that he can say, "Oh, my work was used in a movie," but he's not getting paid for it. You know, and he worked tirelessly. You know, he spends a long time on his craft, and it's. He's not getting, he'll get a thank you and you know, special thanks at the very end of the credits. And he won't be getting any sort of compensation for them using his work as a storyboard, essentially.
Wow. Ed Brubaker created the Winter Soldier, and we knew how popular the Winter Soldier became, and the new Bucky cap and stuff like that. That's Ed Brubaker's work. Yeah. I think I've talked about Ed Brubaker on the show and how anything he writes you should be reading.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I just read the first two Reckless books, and they're fucking amazing, and there's two more. I think the fourth one's about to come out, if it's not out already, but those are all hardcover books.
Mm-hmm.
If you're watching this, I have them right here, but these are the first two.
I'm dying to
And they're beautiful.
Those.
It's Ed Brubaker, Sean Phillips. Sean Phillips and Ed Brubaker are the ultimate team up that do books like Criminal. And you should be reading every single thing that they work together on because they're a perfect dynamic duo. Speaking of team ups, let's talk about how Sonic the Hedgehog 2 was the best movie so far of the year. just kidding. Katie did see everything everywhere all at once that we talked about on the show. That movie's fantastic. I think Everything Everywhere All at Once is actually the best movie of the year. It's mind bending.
I thought it was really fantastic how they very simply explained a multiverse. Like it was like something that like was tractable and like as much of the chaos that's going on, such a clear through line of story. Don't know how they accomplished that. So the editing, the stunts need to have all the Academy Awards, and we need to broadcast only those.
It was almost Moon Knight level of clarity. That being said, I know that the movie comes out this weekend. A lot of y'all will be excited about is the Nicolas Cage movie.
Oh, I'm so excited for that one.
The unbearable weight of
massive talent.
Thank you.
This movie is a lot of fun. The trailer is a lot of fun. I don't know if I've talked about it on the show before. Went to an early preview of the show for Lionsgate, of the movie for Lionsgate. I got to tell you, the concept of the movie is awesome. Nicolas Cage gets requested to go and be a guest of honor to his biggest fan, who's Pedro Pascal. As he's on his way there, he gets intercepted by the CIA, who's like, hey, this guy is a big drug dealer criminal who's kidnapped somebody. We need you to go to undercover while you're there and find out what the story is and help us bring him to justice. Nicolas Cage gets there, befriends Pedro Pascal, because who wouldn't befriend Pedro Pascal? And ultimately, when he's being asked to bring him to justice, is like, hey, wait, this guy's like my best friend now. He worships Nicolas Cage movies. I'm on the down and outs having to take a gig, like being a guest of honor at this guy's party for $1 million because I can't get a gig in Hollywood. The opening scene where he gets rejected by a director to set up that Nicolas Cage is on the down and outs is amazing. It's a real director that he's worked with. It's a fantastic scene. I was laughing my ass off. And of course, seeing Nick and Pedro Pascal back and forth in Nicolas Cage playing himself and just the absurdity and commentary about his career and the whole meta nature of it is a lot of fun. That being said, about an hour in, that's the joke they got, and you want a little bit more meat on the bone. I didn't find it to have any more meat on the bone beyond that joke, and I just wanted things to wrap up in like an escalated manner.
Uh-oh.
But it just delivers exactly what it needs to deliver for it to be fun. I would say this is a great matinee movie.
Okay.
And the joke repeats a lot. The joke of, hey, how crazy is this that Nicolas Cage is playing Nicolas Cage, commenting on Nicolas Cage. I wanted it to escalate into a better story that had like really suspenseful pieces to it, and I did not want to see the ending coming a mile away, and I did because it was just checking a lot of boxes.
Yeah,
and I don't like it when movies check a lot of boxes. So I would say if you're going to watch this, I think it's an excellent matinee. I think it's a fantastic VOD. I think it's a shit ton of fun with your friends who love Nicolas Cage and just love fun movies. It is a fun movie.
Would you call Johnny it a popcorn movie?
A little bit more. Oh, it's a great popcorn movie. Yeah, okay. It's a fun movie. I'm not gonna diss it too much beyond saying Johnny just wanted a little bit more out of it. Just a little bit, maybe one more rewrite looking at the second act and the third. Just a little bit more rewrite.
Do you get that?
But it was fun.
Okay.
It's super fun. There's gonna be another fun movie coming out soon. It's not gonna be coming out soon, but as I profess my love for Sonic 2, I just have to say the fact that today in Deadline we learned that there's going to be a Streets of Rage movie from the writer of what was these Keanu Reeves movies where he's whipping everybody's ass? John Wick. We got one of the John Wick writers.
Fantastic.
And he's doing a Streets of Rage movie. You're too young. You're just too young, Garrett. You don't know about the Streets of Rage.
I know of them. Streets of Rage. I do not know them.
there's four Streets of Rage games, but really we're talking about the first Streets of Rage. And Streets of Rage, like, how, when you're like a middle school kid and you got your Sega Genesis, how are you not going to play a game that has a cover art that looks like this? You're going to play the shit out of that game. All right. Like, let's just face it. You're going to play the hell out of that game. And Streets of Rage is just a beat 'em up. It's like Final Fight. It's like Double Dragon. It's just like a side scrolling beat 'em up in a city that absolutely fucking nobody should live in, because there's people popping out with machine guns in every window and like motherfuckers throwing dynamite out of like manholes and shit. Like, do not live in the city. If you're living in the city where Streets of Rage takes place, you're an idiot. Like, you should have moved out a long time ago. But Streets of Rage, the news was today, and I put it up on the Geekscape Forever group on Facebook. Hell yeah. Streets of Rage is getting a movie from the writer of John Wick and the producers over at Sega of Sonic the Hedgehog 1 and 2.
Hey, that's great. That's huge.
Looks like the Segaverse is coming.
Oh, it seems like it.
The Sega CU is coming.
Who do you think, who would be your dream cast for this?
William Zabka. I mean, it clearly looked like William Zabka in the box art, but I don't know. I mean, I don't care. It's just going to be a bunch of people whipping ass and then beating up people in like hockey masks that are dressed like the Warriors. Yeah. Like,
do you think it's literally like the Mortal Kombat isms of?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mortal Kombat's a tournament movie. This is a make your way through the streets, cleaning up trash as you try and beat up every crooked person in the city, which is everybody. Dude, this is totally the Raid. This movie is everything in the city will kill you. I don't know why you live here. Let's kill them first.
Gotcha.
That should be the plot of this movie. And it's John. I mean, John Wick is a pretty thin narrative. I think we're watching John Wick because the fucking stunts and the choreography is amazing.
Yeah.
I think this will be similar. I think it'll just be like a pretty thin story, but everybody just whipping a bunch of people and it's going to be fun. And then at the end, there'll be a mid-credit scene for how the Sonic universe joins it. You get a bunch of fuzzy animals. I'm hyped for it. The Genesis was my first system that I paid for myself with my allowance money and my lawn mowing money. And that being said, like, those games were important to me, and Streets of Rage was one of them. I cannot wait to go and watch this, even if it's garbage. It won't be garbage because the John Wick movies are good. Yeah. This will be awesome. This movie's going to be awesome. And if it's not, oh no. this episode. Do you have, I mean, you're an elite gamer. With your Fortnite, Katie, do you not remember Streets of Rage?
That's actually the Sega years were stuff that like my cousins had or friends had. I didn't get to get Ghost like full dive into the Sega universe. I had Nintendo OG, and then I had, after much begging, finally had N64, and then didn't have anything until like well after the PS3 had come out. I finally got a PlayStation 2. Bought it with my own money. And then after that, I kind of regained composure and kind of got back on the wagon with PlayStation 4, Xbox.
Okay, Katie, I've got this Genesis Mini here.
Oh, you got the Mini?
I think Streets of Rage is on it.
Oh my god! That's
and
hilarious.
I think we gotta get you to play it. I think you gotta come over to my house.
I'll stream it. Yeah, I got time. I got time now. Let's stream it.
I was just gonna let that go, Katie. Please, I was just gonna let that go.
Oh really? That's when you wanted to stop. When you stopped talking about my layoff.
No, please, Katie.
You're the one that brought it into the conversation, Katie, sir.
Katie, Biden's fixing unemployment. Don't worry, we're gonna get back to the workforce. Okay,
Papa Biden. Okay. I'm just going to sit on my ass.
We're going to play the Streets of Rage. We're going to co-op Streets of Rage. Maybe we'll live stream it and yell at each other throughout the whole thing because it's co-op.
There you go.
Hey, and, okay. All right.
It'll be fun.
Nice.
we'll get your childhood back. Don't you worry, Katie. And Garrett's childhood was being born into the era of the Xbox 360. So he's still very much
a PlayStation 2 boy. I'm a Sony boy.
Okay. Oh. Is that where you started PlayStation 2?
I started. Yeah. I was a handheld Nintendo boy. And I was a PlayStation. PlayStation 2 was my first big chonker console. Cause I had the big original PlayStation 2. Fatty. That was like a big boy. But yes,
so
I'm a Sony.
Cause it was
a
cheaper man. One. All right.
Hell yeah. That's awesome.
Did you ever get into the Nintendo stuff, or was that?
Yes and no. Like I was a big Pokemon kid, and then I had like a Wii, so I dipped my toe. More of my friend group were mostly the Nintendo guys, so I would occasionally play some certain Nintendo. Like, you know, I always had a Smash. You know, you always just have to have Smash. Yeah. But I was definitely more of like an in the Sony first over there, but I have played. I've never been much of a Sega guy though. That's always been just kind of a blind spot for me.
Okay.
No. Well, I'm proud of you, dude. You know what? I can't help but when you were born. You know, all I could do is, like we do on the show every week, we just give you knowledge. All we can do is empower you with knowledge, educate. It's all about educating the future generation.
This is Garrett's what this podcast is. It's an educational podcast. And also, if you get laid off, go fuck yourself.
Yeah, listen, Katie, this podcast, if there's anything I want to deliver to the world, it's
don't ever
it's
be not, unemployed.
It's not information about movies, video games, comics, or my asinine opinion. It is we're here to educate, inspire, and to make sure that people out there who are having a tough time, well, they get made
Stay
fun
down.
Of first, but then we get them up on their feet. Make fun of them first, then put them up
push
on their
them
feet.
Down, then help them up.
Brush them down. Be like, hey, if you don't want to get made fun of, you stay on your feet and don't be a bum. Don't lay there and pour chocolate in your mouth while Jonathan sends you endless reels throughout the day of monkeys doing yard work. Like that is what I do. Sometimes I'll send you a picture of some dude trying to do a backflip and racking his nuts. Sure. That's what friends are for. Mm-hmm. But we're productive here on Geekscape. We have a real message. We really try and help people here. You know, make sure that we're productive members of society.
Wow.
Stop the bullying.
You didn't even believe that.
Not much I believe in, but I do believe this. I believe that we started a podcast and every week we talk to you about movies, video games, comics. We believe that we have 20 plus shows on the Geekscape network. This is only one of them. So what I would believe you're going to do now is you're going to put a little belief in the system and you're going to go and you're going to hit 5 stars on this over on Apple Podcasts. You're going to leave a little review. It says Jonathan talks too much. That's fine. I don't care. Just leave the 5 stars. That's the important part. And you're going to say Katie's amazing. She should play Mr. Mitzelplix in the brand new Superman and Lois. And you're going to say all sorts of stuff. I don't know what else you're going to say. Just share this with your friends, for goodness sakes, because it's important. We give you a service free of charge. And I think it's valuable, kind of. So, subscribe. Follow Katie on social media.
Yeah.
El Sassy Pants.
At El Sassy Pants. You can't find me at my job, so you'll find me there.
Oh, shit. She's amazing. She's amazing. I love Katie. She's just like, all right, if that's where we're going,
by the way,
going.
If anybody has any PA jobs or producer jobs.
You were
I went to my old Machinima Pals and I was like, if you need a PA.
Your talent.
Thank you.
In front of the camera only. In front of the fucking camera only. I don't want you carrying a bunch of C-stands. Bullshit. Oh,
man. I'll be a grip.
All right.
I'm tall enough.
No, you will not. And then this kid right here, Garrett. You're going to follow him on Twitter. And you're going to go listen to his show, yes. The Masters of the Media.
I'm on Twitter at Garrett S. Briones. I have Masters of the Media on the Geekscape Network. I just came back after a little hiatus. Going a new way with the show. Today's episode dropped today. I talked about creative burnout and I talked about Moon Knight comics. And going forward, you know, we're going to talk about stories, we're going to talk about themes, and we're going to talk about what inspirations we can take from other stories, what kind of ideas we can maybe implement into our own. And that leads me to May 17th. My podcast is now becoming bi-weekly. May 17th, I'm starting a mini series on Jason Aaron, Asad Ribic, Russell Dowderman, and Mike Del Mundo's Thor run. I'm going to break up it into 4 or 5 volumes, and I'm going to talk about the whole series, the idea of unworthiness, what are gods, all this stuff, breaking down all the themes. How can we implement it into our own work? So go listen to Masters of the Media, wherever you listen to the good old podcasts.
Hell yeah, man.
That sounds like a quality show. Holy shit.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Well, Geekscape is home, won't keep you. Go subscribe to that right now. And, you know, share this with your friends to be like, hey, they say some really inspiring stuff at the end. It might actually move you. We love you, Garrett. Love you, Katie. Thank you so much for listening to this. Geekscape is, that's me, long-winded. And we'll talk to you next time. We're going to have tons of stuff. We got Doctor Strange. We got the conclusion of Moon Knight. We're going to have tons of stuff to talk about here in the next coming weeks. So we'll be right here. So thank you for being a part of it. Geekscape forever. Over and out.
Sega!
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.